On the 28th of April, I set out for the Dublin depot in Phoenix Park. George, my English friend, beside me. A peeler was standing at either side of the gate. He told us to wait till he sent in a message to the office. Then he took us into a big room where three or four guards were busy writing and going through papers. One of them came up to me. We followed him into another room. "Take off your coat and shirt till I measure you." I did so. He took out his tape. "He's very thin, only 34 inches round the chest," said he in English. "And what is the right measurement, Sir George?" 36. I became anxious, thinking he was going to throw me out for the sake of 2 inches. "Throw off your shoes now till I take your height," said the guard. "What is the right height?" said I. 5 feet 9 inches. He put a sheet of paper on the floor by the wall. "Put your heels on the paper now," said he. I obeyed. "And now stand straight up against the wall." I obeyed again, but I thought it was as well to raise myself on my toes to increase my height. He bent down and drew the paper gently from under my heels. I was caught in the act. I stood up straight again, and by God, I was 5 feet 11 inches. Next morning at 7 o'clock I arose and set out once more for the park. Some 40 young men were standing inside before me. A guard with a bugle came out. He stood at the corner of the barrack and blew. In a moment, guards in hundreds were gathering from all directions. There were 2 sergeants in charge, and before long I heard that terrible word, "Shun!" Oh, you could have heard it a mile from home. The sergeant came up with a sheet of paper in his hands. He stood before us, looking at it. "Patrick Feeney, stand out here," and so on, till he had called the last man. "Squad," he cried, and immediately afterwards the terrible word, "Shun! Form fours! Right turn! Quick march!" Then away we marched into the gymnasium. Each of us was seated at a table by himself, a pen and plenty of paper before him. An officer came in with a form for each of us and gave us sums to do. Then we were told to write a short essay on tillage. I scratched my head. "Musha, I don't know in the world," said I to myself, "will I do it in Irish?" "Upon my word, I will." I seized my pen and attacked the paper vigorously. I left no stone unturned. I went down as far as the strand at the end till I had the crop stored. When we had finished, we were ordered to be back at 3 o'clock. We were led to the dispensary. There we were ordered to strip off our clothes. My own name was called, and I went into the room to the doctor, a very decent man. He took up his instruments and put one of them into my back. "Say 99, please." 99, said I loudly, for fear he might find any fault with me. "Oh, you are as sound as a herring," said he. "It's no wonder," said I, "for I was born and bred in their company." He laughed. Next morning, I'd made my way back to the gate. The sergeant came down, gave us the commands, and off we marched. We turned in under a big archway and were ordered to wait there till we were called. Before long, we heard a voice. "Michael O'Callaghan, come in here." We stopped talking at once. The boy went in. Soon he came out with a look of weeping. "I did not pass," said he, with tears in his eyes. He shook hands with us all and went his way. Altogether, 12 were struck off the books. Then I heard my own name called. My heart was in my mouth with the flutter of fright that came over me. "Well," said the guard, who was there before me, "you have passed, boy. Write your name here." "Oh, by God," said I in Irish as I took up the pen, "I have made my white coat at last." "How did you get on?" I was asked when I went out. "Well," I replied contentedly. I took out my pipe, and I tell you I sent the smoke flying. One by one the others went in heavy-hearted and came out rejoicing. We went off to the sleeping rooms. My eyes opened wide when I saw about 14 small beds along the walls. Whatever happiness I had felt before, it all left me now when I looked at the little iron bed beneath me, covered with two thin blankets. I was tired and weary, without vigor, pleasure, or mirth. I knew I was under control again. I took off my clothes and got into bed. After a while, a sergeant came in. The noise stopped. "Lights out!" he cried. At 6 o'clock, not a moment before or after, I heard the bugle blowing. Oh, Lord, wasn't I vexed and tormented without a wink of sleep all night. We went out and made for the wash house. In 10 minutes we were washed and clean. Then the bugle blew again. We went out into the square. The sergeant was standing there before us, calling the roll. It was there I heard the first word of Irish. As he called out each name, a man would answer, "Ancho." We were put in charge of a sergeant, a small, short, haggard, rough-voiced fellow. He stood out before us and began by giving a lecture on what we had to do. Then he gave us a command. "Squad!" he cried. "Shun!" And I noticed the sinews of his neck ready to burst with the strain. "Quick march!" And away we marched up the square. I spent 3 months drilling in that fashion, until I was as thin as an eel, without a drop of sweat in my body. It was the 10th of November. We had just sat down in the schoolhouse with our books open, when the superintendent called three names. "Ancho," we answered. "Well," said he, "I have to examine the three of you for sending you into the country." Oh, Lord, I trembled hand and foot. I had made no preparation for it. The superintendent took me first and questioned me about at least 9 acts. I answered each question. Next day, I got instructions from the commissioner that I was to leave at 5 o'clock the following morning for Inverin in the county of Galway. I was walking across the room, and I doubt if there was any man in Ireland at that moment as happy as I. The next morning, I was seated in the train at my ease, thinking and reflecting on the world. I, in the guard's uniform, going out to Connemara to enforce the laws. My fare was paid to Moy Cullen, wherever that was. I listened to the sound of the train and thought of my first journey through the middle of Ireland. After a while, we stopped, and I heard them shouting, "Change for Clifton!" I entered another train which was waiting, and before long it started out from the station. There were two others in the same compartment, the queerest two I ever saw, clad in white flannel from head to heel. Before long, one spoke to the other in Irish. Oh, my heart leapt with love of that language. "How far is it to Moy Cullen, Cole?" "Oh, we are not far from it now. I dare say it's after the putsheen the peeler is going," said the other fellow with a glance at me. They looked at each other, smiling. I pretended to be reading a book, as though I didn't understand them. "I dare say they are bad enough back in your place," said Cole. "Oh, musha, my son, the divil is on all peelers." "I dare say you are from Connemara," said I to them in Irish. "Oh, the divil," said Cole. "Oh, the divil," said the other fellow. "Oh, isn't it well we didn't say anything out of the way?" "Did you never hear that a peeler is not to be trusted until he's 7 years under the clay?" At Moy Cullen, I leapt from the train and went into the parcels office. "I dare say it's far from here to Inverin," said I to the man inside. "It's nearly 28 miles. I wonder, could I get a car here?" "Oh, that is a thing you could not get," said he with a laugh. "But I'll tell you what you will do. It's not far up to the barracks, and the guards there will help you." I walked up along a wet, rough road till I found the barracks. 3 guards were inside. I told them my business, to get Inverin on the telephone. Then I spoke into the telephone myself and told them to send out a car. When I arrived at Inverin late that evening, I carried my bag up into the room. I was very happy. I looked out of the window. Galway Bay lay stretched out before me. I stayed a while, watching the glitter of the moonlight on the sea. Then I turned on my heel and went to bed. After 2 years in Connemara, I went home for my holidays to the island. How full of happiness I was when I reached Dingle. I took a car to Dunquin, and how my heart opened when I reached Slayhead and saw the Blasket. At Dunquin, my father was before me on the top of the cliff. "God bless you home again, my son," said my father with a light of joy in his face. When we came into the quay in the Blasket, I thought I would never reach the house. "O King of Angels," cried an old woman, "isn't it a fine man you've become?" As I approached the house, I saw my grandfather standing in the doorway. When he saw me, he remained there standing, shedding tears of joy. "Musha, how are you since, Dado?" He could not speak yet, but embraced me. "Musha, my heart," said he at last, laughing. "It's many a savage dog and bad housewife you have met since." "No doubt of it," said I, walking in. After tea, I wandered out through the village. There was a great change in 2 years. Green grass growing on the paths for lack of walking. 5 or 6 houses shut up and the people gone out to the mainland. The big red patches in the sandhills made by the feet of the boys and girls dancing. There was not a trace of them now. When I returned home, the lamps were being lit in the houses. I went in. My father and grandfather were sitting on either side of the fire. My grandfather smoking his old pipe.
"20 Years a Growing" by Maurice O'Sullivan was read by P.G. Stevens, abridged by Anne Rhys-Jones, and produced by Maurice Leach.